Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, really cool fucking dude, Matt from Vertical Horizon. Not only a great interview, but he sings and sounds unbelievable. It's a really good episode. James Mattern steps in and does the show with me. And if you're a fan of Vertical Horizon, you could have heard this 5 days earlier, commercial-free, in HD, at gasdigital.com, which also includes every single episode we've ever done, going back to episode number one, where Big J and I answer the questions of the first to each other on that first episode, almost 10 years ago. It's pretty wild. Use the code SDR14. You're going to get a 14-day free trial. That's good throughout spring. So get in while the getting's good. But really, just share, love, like, follow the show wherever you're listening right now. So here it is right now, the Vertical Horizon episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show.
It is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. I am Ralph Sutton, back with me once again. I like the ever-changing background that he does in his kitchen.
Look
at
this.
Bruce. I see Red Fox on the other side.
Red Fox, you got to wash your ass. Okay, more importantly, you got to wash your asshole. I got a candle just in case the ghosts of Kurt Cobain and want to come in here. We can record an unplugged. I like it.
I still feel that kitchen looks wildly unused.
Yeah, because I don't use it. That's why. But I just got a cleaning. I got a new cleaning lady. I mean, unbelievable. I could have diplomats over for supper.
Okay,
and we'd get peace done.
I remember from a couple weeks ago, you just need a set of pots and pans, and then you could actually cook for them.
Baby, I'll cook. I'll be fancy, too. I'll be like Tom Cruise in Cocktail, but with food. I'll throw the pescetti in the air from the pan.
All right.
Like a man.
So I'm going to introduce this guy. It's pretty wild. If you go back to the prime third studio record back in 99, these guys fucking owned the airwaves. They had the most listened to song of that year, with top five in 2000. It was pretty crazy. And then hit after hit. I've been doing a deep dive on this band. They have 7 studio records, a couple of live album, currently on tour. The last album was called The Lost Mile, and it is from about 6 years ago right now. But you could find everything at verticalhorizon.com and on Instagram at official Vertical Horizon. The lead singer, the main dude, Matt Scannell, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. That was a great introduction.
Thank you.
By the way, I'd like to say this. I always used to, because you guys, which we'll get into a little bit later, when I was a strip club DJ, all your songs were mainstream. Like, we had to play them every week or we'd get in trouble. And right. I used to say on the mic, it's time to play some VH, but not that VH, the other VH. And from what I eventually hybridized your name to Verizon, like Vertical Horizon is called you Verizon. But from what I understand, you kind of got a nod from the only people that mattered that it's okay that you're the other VH. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. So I had become friendly with Matt Bruck, who was Eddie's guitar tech and personal assistant and many other things. And now Matt, I think, runs or does something in terms of running the EVH brand with Wolfgang. Obviously, growing up at that time, Eddie Van Halen, you know, was one of the biggest influences for me in my world. And Van Halen was one of my favorite bands. Matt invited me up to 5150 to the Van Halen studio at a certain point. And I went up there to check out an amp that I was maybe going to buy from him, an old Marshall, not from Eddie, but from Matt. And Matt was showing me around, and I'm, you know, my brain is exploding. I'm seeing the Frankenstein guitar. I'm seeing the amp. You know, I consider Unchained to be, you know, the greatest rock guitar sound of all time. And I aspire one day to have something that's like, you know, a small percentage of how great that that tone is. So I was seeing that amp, you know, and as I'm sort of in this workshop area, the door opens up and it's Alex, and Alex walks in, and Alex is a huge guy, enormous hands. He's walking towards me. I'm sweating, and he reaches his hand out and he shakes my hand. He said, "What's your name?" I said, I'm Matt Scannell. And I think Matt said, "Oh, he's in Vertical Horizon." And Alex looked down to me and he said, "Oh, so you're in the other VH." And I was just like, okay, this is the coolest, man. This is the greatest moment. He was so sweet to me. He was really, really kind.
And we're getting a little ahead of ourselves by me asking this, but I know Keith, your former bandmate, came up with the name. When that name was created, did you guys think about that? Oh, VH like Van Halen, or that didn't even register at that point in time?
No, I mean, I remember, so finding a name for a band is a fool's errand. It's it's impossible to do, right? So Keith and I were back and forth and back and forth on ideas, and he probably did come up with it, but I'm not sure. It was definitely like we were playing tennis with band names going back and forth, but it didn't even occur to us, honestly, that you know that VH was you know, it never for one second like even crossed our minds that
that's funny
that would be an issue, like you know what I mean, like are people going to confuse us? Not that they ever did, but you know what I mean, that was it wasn't even in consideration. It was just like, oh, that sounds cool, it's going to make people think, and it's better than all the other names that we've thought up so far, which are terrible.
Do you remember any, because I know some of your early band names like Tonaz and Sapphire and Off the Cuff and the Very Thing, not great
that.
Names. So were there other bad names that you remember?
I wish you had done your research more poorly, frankly.
That it's is the best astounding. Part of every episode with a musician, Ralph gets dirt. He can tell you not only just band names that you had that were talked about, and to see him bring them up, and people, I mean, your reaction is what happens. And it's,
yeah, I'll take it one
horrible.
Step further, James. It's Sapphire, but spelled incorrectly on purpose. How about that?
How's it spelled?
With one less P instead of both P's or something like that.
We thought it looked dumb with two P's. So we used artistic
license.
The correct
way is dumb. It's hilarious.
And said, we said enough of that. It's going to look cooler on the T-shirt if it's just one P.
So it looks like it's just Sap Higher. Someone named Sap is Sap. Looking to get hired.
Yes, Sap Higher. Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't Tones, Ralph, if we're going to get right
Tonaz,
on this.
Tonaz.
Okay, it's Tonaz. Yeah. And there was like Tonaz. An umlaut over the O.
I said Tonaz.
And what was the argument against it? That people might just call you Toenails? Because I would call you Toenails. If there was a band called Tonaz, I'd be like, oh, you mean the fucking Toenails?
Okay, so you're playing the part right now of my childhood best friend's older brother, who would mock us at all times, and he would call us Toenails at every opportunity. So yeah, you're
That's
doing
hilarious.
The right thing, which
Did
is
he have
probably
a book accent too?
Well, he's from Worcester, Massachusetts, so there was a thing.
Oh, well, he probably used some other language. Yes,
maybe this. Yeah, maybe it's,
your little pussy's gonna be called Toenails.
There you go.
Is this how the other name went? You guys, hey, let's just come up with some names off the cuff. And then you went, now we'll do that.
I don't remember that one. That was in high school. You know, my friend Jeff Chartrand, I don't remember that one. And The Very Things was also not our finest moment. So you can see, at the very least, we chose maybe the best bad option.
Yeah, no, Vertical Horizon is a cool name because you're like, wait, what does that actually fucking mean? Like, it's kind of, but let's go back a little further. So you grew up in Worcester, Mass. That's where you started, right? And
yes.
What's funny, because now I've listened to you talk so passionately about guitars. James can play. I can barely play. But when you first saw a guitar in your house, and I could be wrong about this, but you didn't even know how to play it. Like, you put it in your lap like a lap guitar, but you figured out how to play My Best Friend's Girl. So that started your love for guitar.
Boston,
it did. Yeah, man. Yeah, the car is amazing. So yeah, my dad obviously he had a guitar, but he obviously didn't play very much. So it was just standing in the corner. And so I wound up taking the guitar and playing, figuring out I would play it in my lap, but it was so that's my, you know, 7-year-old version of My Best Friend's Girlfriend.
That's pretty good, though. It's better than I could do, I think. That's pretty cool. And so what's funny is then you're, you know, going to school, and I guess your parents felt you were spending too much time ogling women. Yes. And it's time to move you to somewhere where you can focus on your studies. And you went to an actual, like, academy, like Deerfield Academy. You started in sophomore year, right?
Yes, I did. Yeah, it was an all-boys school, and it really was probably the best thing that could have ever happened to me, because it did help me to really focus. It helped. I mean, they taught, boy, they taught us how to study. They taught us how to manage time. They taught us how to push ourselves, and it wasn't necessarily the most, like, supportive, touchy-feely place in the world, mm-hmm. but then again, the world isn't very touchy-feely, so it was really helpful, you know?
Was it a military academy or just an all-boys school?
No, just an all-boys boarding school in Western Massachusetts. It's co-ed now, and that's cool. But when I was there, it was all boys. And it really was, there wasn't much else to focus on, truly, because you're there in the middle of Western Massachusetts. There's no town to speak of. I mean, there are some smaller towns, but you know, it was your studies and your sports, and then I had my guitar, and I turned to my guitar.
There was like one other dude that played guitar, and that's how you guys kind of befriended each other.
Yeah, Jeff Chartrand is his name, and he was and is an incredible guitar player and an amazing singer, and so we were both friendly from the beginning. And actually, he was obsessed, back to the VH thing, he was obsessed with Van Halen, and he knew how to play a lot of Van Halen songs. So he taught me how to play some Van Halen songs, and then eventually we decided we would try to be in a band together, and so we started this band. We played covers and stuff, but he and I naturally sort of became close because we were so passionate about the instrument, and we also, I think, pushed each other on some mm-hmm. levels, because he was really good and I wanted to be really good, and so, you know, we were off to the races.
You often wonder about, there's, I guess, two types of guitar players. I would say probably there's a lot more, obviously, but like the two grand categories are the people who can just kind of immediately figure shit out, here's a song and can play it, and then there's the people that figure out how their own path forged through figuring out how to play guitar, and those people probably write better, where the others are great to be in a band. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
I could be wrong. That's just an overview of that.
No, I think it's a really insightful point, because there comes a time, I think, as someone who's aspiring to be musically creative, where you have to kind of possibly step away from learning other people's songs and learn how to write things for yourself. Mm-hmm. And some people are able to do that, and like you said, I think some people are less, you know, apt to do that. It doesn't really matter ultimately, right? It's like, right. It's all just, if all you want to do is play Van Halen songs and you can, like, good for you. That's better than 99.
Van Halen tribute band and kill it. Yeah. I mean, there you go.
Exactly.
What's funny though, is that you and I are roughly the same age. I am 54. I think you're a year younger than me. I could be wrong.
No, I'm
right?
54. I turned 54 in February.
Yeah. So we're right. In December. So right by each other. So
yeah,
you and I grew up with the same musical influences, where I heard, like, you loved all the shit I grew up loving, Motley Crue, Winger, Guns N' Roses, like all that shit. But obviously, which is funny, because I feel Vertical Horizon is this, which you also were a big fan of the new wave stuff, the Depeche Modes and the Cures and stuff like that. And Vertical Horizon kind of teeters between that. They're like a rock band, but they have that new wavy sound as well. And it's very evident when you especially listen to those earlier records too. And even like Lost Mile too, like, you get those vibes in those records. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, I take that as a huge compliment. It took me a long time to sort of become proficient enough at playing keyboards to write with a keyboard or a piano, but to acknowledge the influence that bands like Depeche Mode and New Order have had on my songwriting. And actually, it wasn't until I went to Deerfield for boarding school that I was really exposed to bands like The Cure and Depeche Mode and Joy Division, you know, where in Worcester it was far more the like rock stuff, Winger, Rat, you know, Aerosmith, obviously Boston. And I love that stuff, love it. And then when I went off to boarding school, you know, a lot of these guys, I mean, and I was the first time I was exposed to the Grateful Dead as well. I had no idea, you know, I'd never heard any of their music before high school. So, but yeah, when I remember hearing Disintegration, that Cure record, coming down the hall, and I just was flying down the hall to find out what the heck that was.
Oh, that's cool. You know, James, I used to have longer hair, you know, and people used to tell me I look like David Gahan, but I don't think I look like him at all.
David Gahan?
Yeah.
When I had short hair and spikes, I kind of looked like him. People are like, you look like the dude from Depeche Mode. And they used to tell me I kind of look like Chino from the Deftones.
Oh, yes, I definitely can see Gahan in your nose.
Baby, you let's discuss it.
And the clap, the little, what do we call this thing?
Dude, Policy of Truth I had on 45. Oh. Let me ask you this. When you come back from boarding school, back to good old Worcester, and you're listening to The Cure and gothy stuff like that, how was the older brother there? Why you listening to that pussy ass makeup shit? And why don't you change the name of your band to The Yankees Fucking Suck? That's my impression of what
The first part of that was certainly true. Yeah, I was suspect. That's what they said. You suspect.
Suspect spectacular. I love New Englanders, Ralph. They're the best. I've had a couple New England girlfriends. One was out of her mind, so I don't blame her. But they're just, it's just something about New England. Everyone's a wonderful, and I mean this in a great way, meathead. Everyone just gets reduced at one point to shut the fuck up and just sit. They're just the best. And they're honest. I fucking love New England. If I could make a living, I'd move there right now.
Nice. I've only been a few times. So now, all right, before we go any further, you know the magical phrase, $60 kilos. If you're looking to fucking stock up on your favorite kilos of Kratom, there is nowhere better to go than YoKratom.com. They've been sponsoring the show for 4 years. I saw in the Gas Digital Studios yesterday, Shannon's favorite, which is called Trainwreck. But you can try your favorites. Why? Because it's easy at $60 a kilo at YoKratom.com. Unique strains, unique blends, delivered fast. Go right now to YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo and sponsor of the show for goddamn 4 years. All right, let's get back into it. Some point, you're into like high school bands and stuff, but I could be fucking this up because I try to do my research, but I fuck up a lot.
Dude, you've got off the cuff. Like if you just stop there.
Yeah,
off
I probably the cuff, should. I should just need. Walk away, right?
Let's be honest.
You drop the mic right now, bro.
So there's you're speaking of this guy. I had never heard of him before, but it made me look him up. And this is, I think, what brought you and Keith together was Michael Hedges and your cover of his cover of All Along the Watchtower. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Anybody who's not familiar with Michael Hedges, if you have any interest in well, I just would say acoustic guitar, period, right? But a lot of the current generation of players who do things like tapping on their acoustics on the frets and tapping on the bodies, creating multi rhythms while playing the instrument at the same time, a lot of that can be kind of traced back to Michael Hedges. In my experience, was the first guy who had been doing that. So I would go see him all the time when I was living in Washington, D.C. And actually, I went to see him when I was living out in Western Massachusetts in Northampton. And he blew my mind. And so then, yes, I drilled down on how does he do it? It was inconceivable that one guy was doing all that stuff at the same time. And it turns out he sort of like Joni Mitchell really experimented with alternate tunings. And then he would also find ways to add percussive elements onto his guitar. And so, yeah, you know, mostly out of passion, but also out of like a party trick at parties. You know, if the guitar's getting passed around, I'm gonna play Michael Hedges' version of All Along the Watchtower, and cool. It's gonna be a little different.
And they described it online. I had never heard of him before. You talked about him. They call it violent acoustic, which was kind of an interesting.
I like that.
Yeah. And he was good. I listened to like 5 or 6 songs. Definitely. I think he passed away though, right?
He did, tragically. Yeah. He passed away. He has a record called Live on the Double Planet, which is, if you're going to sort of start somewhere with him, I would say just go to Live on the Double Planet. You'll hear him in a live setting doing all this stuff. It's just him up on that stage, I believe. I don't think he has any accompaniment. And it's great. And he's got a beautiful voice. And it was incredibly inspiring. So, yeah.
So now at some point, I think it's you and Keith are doing, and I could be wrong again, like acoustic duo for a bit, right? That's the shtick for a little while. And then you start missing the band vibe because it is a very different control of a room if there's no drummer, if there's no big, powerful amps. And, you know, just then a band is formed. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. I mean, I think we probably toured for 5 or 6 years around the country, just in a Jeep or a Ford Explorer, and and we could do that because it was just the two of us and our guitars and some CDs and T-shirts, but. Yeah, as we were getting to slightly bigger places, we were missing kind of the impact of a rock band, and right. I had up until that time, you know, played in bands. I hadn't really done the acoustic duo thing, so that was kind of a little sidestep for me along the way. Right. And then a lot of people sort of became familiar with us during that time. And then when we kind of veered back to a band thing, they kind of felt left out, which was unfortunate. But in terms of the big picture of kind of, at least personally, my musical journey, we were always going to get back to a band. You know, that was always my favorite thing.
And what's cool is you release a couple of independent, like actual albums, and then a live record, which we'll get to in a second. But I think on the second record, you even had the drummer of Dave Matthews Band in there. Is that right?
Carter Beauford. So John Alasia and Doug Derryberry were two dear friends of ours in Washington, D.C., who had ties to the school that the college Keith and I went to. And so John was producing Dave Matthews Band's records, and John at some point had borrowed an acoustic guitar from me for Dave to record some stuff on one of the records they were doing. And when I went back over to pick it back up, I met Dave. It was really nice to meet him, and we sort of were loosely in a similar orbit there for a while. And we met Carter and just fell in love with him. He's such a stunningly talented guy, but he's also just this you know, amazingly joyous person, right? And so I don't remember how it came up, but we were doing this second record and we had decided to bring drums into the sort of musical palette. And we had a few songs that we had done with some local players, and I had actually played drums on one song because I love drums so much, and at the time I was like, I could totally do this. I mean, it's okay, but no, you let the professionals do the job. And ultimately Carter was up there at their house, and I just said, hey man, is there any way like could you play on some of our stuff? And he just, you know, without hesitation said absolutely, you know, came up, and I think he did the whole rest of the record in like 1 or 2
That's
days.
Cool.
Yeah. And like, he also, let me also just like give love to Carter for this, because we, not too long thereafter, we had a showcase down in Nashville, where some people from record companies were going to come out to see us play, and we didn't have a drummer. So we were scrambling, like, well, wow, we need to find a drummer who will play this showcase. And what are we going to do? And so we asked Carter. We just said, you know, we know this is crazy. We know you're not going to be able to do this, but you know, if you can start at the top, let's start at the top. Let's ask you, is there any way you could do this for us? And he said, yes.
That's
came
down cool shit.
From Charlottesville and played the showcase for us. And I've heard some bootlegs of that recording, and it's just so, his command of the groove is
cool.
Just, it's like the biggest couch, you're just lying back. Like you can do no wrong, you know? And so Carter, I will forever be in his debt.
So what starts to happen, James, which is kind of cool, is that they're playing a lot in the DC area. Right. And what happens is DC is very political, obviously. So a lot of people come in, interns to work for some politician or whatever for the summer, or whatever. Then they go back to their college. So then Vertical Horizon starts getting asked to play at different colleges because they heard it's like the old school equivalent of going viral. They went viral that way, where you start getting and building quite a following. So much so that the Live Stages record, which was kind of like a fuck you to major labels, starts with a 35, 40 second crowd screaming how much of fans they are. And that's what finally got the attention of major labels.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The geography of the band living in DC actually wound up out to be really fortuitous, because they would go do their internship on the Hill, they would then head back to their fraternities or sororities or whatever, and they'd bring tapes. They'd just be recording the shows, so right. There'd be these live tapes they'd be sharing with their friends and stuff. Yeah, and then all of a sudden, now we were getting offers from Michigan, we're getting offers from, you know, Wisconsin, and you know, we just wanted to make it all happen, and so we did. It was amazing. And that record, you're absolutely right, Ralph. That first 35 seconds, because we had been told no by a lot of major labels. They passed on us. And sort of, yeah, out of frustration and a little bit of, you know, giving them the finger, we were like, let's just play the audience screaming at the top of their lungs and let's let them pass on us now.
And what's funny is I think you said at one point that you guys were like, fuck it, we're just going to do the independent thing. But then a major label comes calling, you're like, maybe we'll do the major label thing.
Yeah. Well, so we were sound scanning our records. So when we would sell the records out at the end of the show from the side of the stage or from the back of the Explorer or whatever after the show, we were scanning those units. And so once we sold 70,000 units independently by ourselves, I think that was the magic number when the majors said, well, we don't really get the songs and we don't really get this band, but they're clearly going to do it without us. So let's step up and try and make it happen. And then, so there were two labels that were kind of vying for us at the time, and ultimately we signed with RCA.
With RCA, right. And so now what I like is that it also, I think, delves back into or goes back to your military, or not military, but academy schooling, is that you get this deal and then you're like, you know what? I want to become a better songwriter. And you sat and you wrote about 100 songs before you felt comfortable for what ended up on Everything You Want.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I knew it was our shot, and I took it very, very, very seriously. And there are things that moments in my life that I look back on and wish that I could have done something differently or better, or, you know, whatever. But I am very, very proud of myself for applying myself the way I did and trying to raise my level, because it needed to be raised, frankly. Like, I needed to be a better writer. I definitely needed to be a better singer if we were going to do it, and I was going to do it. And I took that time very seriously, and it worked out, which is amazing.
And what's wild, so the first single didn't do that well, which is We Are, but then the title track comes out, which I said at the top is Everything You Want, which I think, like, fucking, if you're at least 30, you're going to know that song, because it might have been the number one, but definitely top five played song in all of 2000. It's also, which is funny, James, it holds the record, I believe, for the longest time ever it took from release to becoming number one.
Yeah.
Wow, that's not sure. Number one mainstream, not number one rock, number one.
I'm not sure if it still holds that record, but that's a great record to have. Because like, if you're just, you know, like the little engine that could, you're just like, yeah, I'm gonna do it, Yeah, we got there.
And that song was about, like, it's a true story about a girl that wasn't interested in you, right? We've all been in the friend zone for a while, and that, but at the end it turns to I'm everything you need. So I guess you eventually doinked her, I'm guessing.
No. No,
oh, too bad.
No
doinking. But what are we, minute 28 before you went to doink? 26? Yeah. Good job, Ralph. That's a record. That's the longest it's gotten on the show before we said doink. That's like, he just hit the Hot 100.
Yeah, there you go.
Said the word doink in quite some time. Yeah, we're going to bring it back.
But you're not on the show weekly. That's the problem.
What's cool is the follow-up songs fucking kill it too, because You're a God gets into Bruce Almighty. Did you ever meet Jim Carrey or no?
I never did. No. I never did. But I did go to the movie and see the movie like three times in a row. The placement, you know, I haven't seen the film in a while, but it's in the film for like 3 minutes. I mean,
it's really in the film. Yeah, I watched actually somebody on YouTube just clipped the whole thing of when it's in there, and I watched that. I was like, wow, that's like basically the song, you know. It's really in there. And then also, so then just quickly on You're a God, you had a very young Tiffany Amber Thiessen in the fucking video too. Did you cast that? Who casted that?
Well, I'm trying to recall how it happened too. It wouldn't have been our idea because, frankly, we would never have thought that she would have said yes. Mm-hmm. But she, I think she was somehow familiar with the band, someone at the label, or maybe the directors of the video. It could have mm-hmm. been those guys. But yeah, she said she would do it, and we were ecstatic. And she was fantastic. Like, she was funny. She was cool. She helped put us all at ease. Like, we were all still very, I'll just speak for myself, I was still very nervous in front of a camera. Mm-hmm. You know, the, like, what do I look like? What am I doing? Why am I moving my body this way? I don't know what the heck I'm, what are these pants? You know, like all this stuff. Right. And she just was so encouraging and sweet. And I just think she's wonderful. Every now and again, I bump into her, and I'm always happy to see her. She was wonderful. Yeah.
And with that song, which is funny, is that you said that because that opening guitar lick, whatever you call it, those chords, that it's, I always felt that it sounded like almost like it was dreamy or like hallucinogenic, and that actual progression came to you in a dream.
That's everything you want. Everything you want. Yeah. Everything you want came to me. So Tiffany was in the You're a God video.
You're a God video. Sorry, I'm jumping around. I apologize.
No, it's okay. It's all right. Yeah, yeah. No, thanks for knowing this stuff. Yeah. So everything you want came to me in a dream. That thing at the beginning, this bit. That thing. And I heard it and I just thought, well, that's cool. And it was probably like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I sort of rolled over a little bit, but I was just too tired and exhausted. I thought, I'll remember it in the morning. I'll just remember it in the morning, which of course you never, ever do.
Right. But that time you did, I guess.
But well, no, because then about 20 minutes later, the chords came in. I heard the chords. Wow. And then 10 minutes later, I heard the whole chorus from start to finish with the ride patterns on the old drums and the bass guitar and everything. And that was where it really kicked me out of bed.
That's cool. That's fucking cool.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Because it's such a big, influential record, then the next single, which is Best I Ever Had, which I give you credit for this, you liked it so much that you're like, am I stealing from Radiohead here? Because you went, it's too good, and you went and you listened through every fucking Radiohead record to make sure you didn't steal it from them.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly true. That song is and was better than I am as a writer, and so I was suspicious of it. but turns out it was me. And that's
great.
That's great. Yeah.
I wish more comedians were like you. Holy shit. God damn.
Wait, you alluded to this off air. I don't know if you talk about this openly, but you've been bald since we've known who you are.
Yeah.
Was it something you said? You lost your hair at a very young age? Like,
yeah. Nice, James.
One of us.
Yeah, I started losing my hair when I was probably 18 or 19 years old, very, very young, maybe 20. And I started to get self-conscious of it. And of course, it was a time when if you were going to be in rock, you had hair. It was like I mean, maybe the Midnight Oil guy, but I don't even think.
That's true. He did. He was bald.
I'm not sure. And like Michael Stipe, I don't believe.
Wasn't the guys from Right Said Fred, they were bald.
So
I think there's a lot of reasons why they were bald, though, too. I think there was a strategic reason for that.
So we'll say there were exceptions to this rule.
Right.
Yeah, a couple.
But the general rule was like you need long, flowing locks.
Right.
And I lost my locks, man. I was pissed. But it did. I think ultimately it was a great. I do have to say that once I shaved my head, I thought so there was something inside of me that was like, oh yeah, that's you. Okay, there you
right.
are.
That was always cool. It's what I think why you look ageless is because instead of looking at a guy that's going bald like me, you know, my hair, I keep getting a bigger forehead every year. You don't have that. You've just looked this way for fucking 30 years.
And you got that's a good right. head. Some thank people you, have the head.
Thank you, James. I'm digging yours too, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm telling
you. By the way, if I ever shave my head, I'm going to look wildly deformed. There's no
doubt. It might
doubt
not work for you. I was lucky where I was keeping it short, and I met this girl, and we were hanging out, and she had short hair and told me she shaved her head. And she goes, you would look really great with a shaved head. You should consider it. The next day I did it. She happened to be at the bar next to where I lived in Astoria. She goes, why don't you come meet me for a drink? She's like, oh my God, you did it. 30 minutes later, we leave the bar, hooked up, got laid, never looked back. That's a sign
That's
from God, dude. Mana, Allah, Buddha, the universe. No, well, whoever's out there said, you go, this is a sign. This is who you're supposed to be.
Yeah, there's your answer, man. No, it could not have been written more clearly.
God
me,
bless
it
you,
was
Wendy.
Exactly the opposite. I used to keep my hair very short. And then the gay guy that cut my hair on Astroplay said, you would look good with long hair. And I wasn't getting laid at the time at all. I was like 18, 19. All my friends had had sex already, but not me. You know, I had 17 once, but whatever. And I started growing my hair long. And I got it to where it was relatively long. And in college, a girl came and put a note on my desk. And I looked at it and she said, would you like to hang out sometime? Gave me her number. And I legitimately thought, oh, she didn't mean to give this to me. It had to be for somebody else.
Oh,
crazy.
Ralph.
Or me. Excuse me.
But, this is how dudes do it. You wear something, you do something, and you get laid, and you run it to the ground. This is why we are idiots.
We are idiots,
but it's unbelievable.
I still have long hair to this day. All right, there it is. About half the episode of Vertical Horizon for the SDR show. If you go to gasdigital.com right now and use the code SDR14, you get a two-week free trial. You can listen to the rest of it and maybe cancel. I don't care. Just spread the love of the show. And thanks for making it to the end of the episode.